Hello there, guys, and welcome to the One Bad Day Songwriting Podcast, the podcast where we chat about the ins and outs of songwriting and have a lot of fun doing it. My name is Eivindur, or Eivi, and I'm a singer-songwriter from Iceland. I publish music under the artist name One Bad Day. And today the topic is imagery in music. And I have a very special guest on this episode, John Ojaka. Now, John is an American singer-songwriter. He was at one point signed to the biggest new artist deal ever with Interscope Records. And he has since made a very good name for himself as an indie artist and as a music marketer. And I've worked with him a little bit on my marketing. And we've become pretty good friends over the last few months. And it is my great pleasure to have him on this show to discuss imagery and stuff like that. He is an Americana artist, much like myself, a very lyric-centric artist. And I absolutely love his music. I think you should definitely check it out. You can go to johnojaka.com to learn more about John, or you can just go to the show page for this episode, which will be at onebadday.is/episode5, and I'll put a link to John's website there. You should definitely check him out, especially if you're into Americana type music, if you like Bob Dylan, Neil Young, Hank Williams, that sort of stuff. I'm sure you'll get a real kick out of John. Now, before we start, I always like to talk about a few of the things I've been reading and checking out. And, well, I went to the movies and I saw the new Spider-Man film, Into the Spider-Verse. And I gotta say, it is unbelievable. I love that film. It is probably the best animated film I have seen ever. It's lovely. You have to go see it. Whether you like superhero films or not, you gotta see it. Now, as before, you can support this podcast by going to the show description and clicking the Amazon links in there. You can get a free audiobook from Audible if you go to onebadday.is/audible. If you do that, you'll be helping me to bring you this podcast, and I greatly appreciate the support. And as usual, if you want to check out some of my songs, you can go to onebadday.rocks, and there you can get a couple of songs for free. All right, so without further ado, here is my conversation with John Ojaka. Enjoy, guys.
All these things that no one wants.
All right, I'm here with my guest, John Ojaka. Welcome, John.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Did I pronounce your name all right?
You got it. You got it.
Fantastic.
We are another volley in the battle of name pronunciations between you and I.
Yes. For those of you who are listening, I have been a guest on John's podcast a couple of times, and he has trouble with my name, but so does everybody, so that's okay. Well, not Icelandic people, but...
I don't think I've ever got it. I got it somehow once in a... one of these webinar things that you were on where I was only reading your name. Somehow I got it correct there, but with you feeding me pronunciation cues, I get it wrong every time. I'm not quite sure what my malfunction is.
I prefer it that way. Right. It's just better. But welcome. I brought you on to discuss imagery in song lyrics.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess, you know, you and me were both lyric-centric musicians. And, you know, we're both in that sort of Americana space where I guess that's, you know, that's what you expect from that kind of music. But I think it applies to everything. I mean, lyrics are always better, you know, if you use imagery the right way. So I just wanted to just chat to you about your thoughts on... On
using imagery in songs.
Yeah, how you approach that stuff and all that. good stuff.
Well, yeah, this will be an interesting one because, you know, I'm as always very underprepared. No sort of snappy answers queued up for you, and I'm not exactly sure. I know certainly know obviously what we're going to be talking about, but as I thought about this, I didn't really know, you know, do I have a lot to say? It's certainly a huge part of what I do and a huge part of what I love about music, imagery, that is. In fact, I don't think there's an artist out there who I listen to who, you know, is not writing very imagery-based, sort of. That was a terrible description of what I'm talking about, but you know what I mean? Very image-centric kind of lyrics. And yet, it's largely an intuitive process, at least for me. And so, you know, while I suspect I have a lot of, you know, thoughts on it, I don't know how articulate I'll be. So I don't know. Why don't you try to steer me in some kind of a direction so we can put some framework on this, you know, a topic that is somewhat large, broad, ambiguous, confusing, and hard to nail down.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the same with me because when I wrote down this topic, I didn't really know how easy it would be to pinpoint my thoughts, so to speak.
Sure.
But the more I thought about it, you know, I did an episode a couple of weeks ago about lyrics. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that that sort of occurred to me when I was, again, just writing down my thoughts on that was that I think the same principle applies when you're writing song lyrics as with when you're writing pretty much anything, especially creatively, is sure. that you want to show, not tell.
Right.
Everything just works better if you can show it and not tell it. And, you know, I think images and imagery is a lot better in most cases as a way of conveying your meaning rather than just saying things straight out. To me, it usually works better because a lot of the times, if you just, you know, if you say, "Yeah, I'm feeling horrible," that's just it's not gonna resonate with anybody. But if you can paint a picture sure. of how you're feeling horrible, or wonderful, or in love, or whatever the case may be, I just tend to drift towards feeling horrible in my songs. But. But you know, I think it just always it seems like whining a lot of the times if you don't paint a picture of it. You know what I mean?
Right. And you touch on sort of an interesting point, at least in terms of how we set up this conversation and try to tackle the subject, in the sense that you're describing this is a weird way of expressing it, but a more literal imagery. You know, where you're using imagery to express fairly precise thought. So instead of saying it's really hot, you know, it's as hot you were dancing around like a cat on a hot tin roof or something, you know,
right.
a very cliche example, but
sure.
you're still expressing a pretty precise thing in a more colorful way, as opposed to the other type of imagery and probably the kind of imagery that I more think about when talking about imagery and songwriting, which is the broader, almost more, what is the word that I'm looking for? I'm having a brain freeze, you know, where artists go and take a whole bunch of a collage. There we go. Where the song itself is an emotional collage. You know, Bob Dylan was great at that. More modern songwriters like Beck are extreme examples of that, where it's not necessarily a series of succinct thoughts expressed with imagery, but rather one broad emotion throughout the entire course of those 3 or 4 minutes that is
expressed through a lot of imagery. I mean, both of those. I mean, you know, I'm not talking about just one simple thing. And I mean, it's I used one of my songs as an example. That's actually the introduction to this podcast. It's called "Things That No One Wants," where the lyrics, they're all like a collage, it's like a tapestry, like different things that no one wants. That's the, the title of the song. So it goes, you know, the dance inside a jail, a finger through the mail, blah blah blah, all kinds of things that don't really make any sort of sense. They're not precisely similes, but then they sort of form a tapestry of, and then eventually in the end I sort of pull it together in a sort of a, you know, unrequited love type
right.
of thing. But you know, so definitely, I mean, it's all a part of the same tool, I think.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, I'm a huge Dylan fan, you know, Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he's full of metaphor. And that's even another possible distinction to make, the difference if we even see being one between sort of metaphor and imagery. You know, metaphor certainly uses a lot of imagery, but they're not necessarily the same thing, although, you know, I'm probably using the terms fairly interchangeably. But I'm a huge fan of Bob Dylan, and he was really famous for that. You know, lines like "the commander in chief while chasing a fly says death to all those who would whimper and cry, and while dropping a barbell, he points to the sky saying the sun is not yellow, it's chicken." You know, when one of my favorite lines in a song, and yet if you asked me to translate that into a precise meaning, I'd have to think about it for a long time.
Yeah.
And I'd probably land pretty far from the mark in terms of what the artist intended. But it still fills me with a pretty precise feeling of angst and, you know, societal unrest and all these different issues that were no doubt at the forefront of people's minds at that time. So it connect, you know, listening to a line full of imagery like that, it does connect me with a pretty precise feeling, while at the same time, I would probably struggle to translate it. That's not the right
way
of saying either, but
interpret.
To tell you exactly and there we go, I would struggle to interpret that on a literal level, and yet I'm left with a very precise feeling after listening to it. And I think that's what is sort of so powerful and maybe important about imagery, and why so many great songwriters and really all of the sort of traditional, as you touched on, all the traditional roots music, all of the storytelling genres really rely on imagery, I think, is because through music, I think most of us, and maybe all forms of art, certainly specifically with music, I think these storytellers, they use metaphor and imagery and give us an opportunity to sort of externalize a lot of our own feelings, things that are kind of knocking around inside of us. And by not being literal, you know, by not telling us exactly how the songwriter is feeling in a precise situation, by broadening things out a bit and using imagery to tell a broader story, I think it allows us to attach some of our own internal struggles to a song that for an artist might have a very different meaning, and still get that cathartic experience. You know, we're able to, again, externalize our problems, move through them, grab onto them, whereas we're not always able to do that in real life. And if some guy named Joe was telling us his story about, you know, his particular feelings, we wouldn't necessarily have that same opportunity either, I think.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think, you know, Dylan is a great example. I think Leonard Cohen is another fantastic example where,
sure,
you know, most, if not all of his lyrics are very surreal, and you don't really get a real sense of what they're about exactly. And I think that's a great point. And I certainly got, because I was just listening to some of your songs earlier today before we started recording this, to get a better, because I have listened to your music, but maybe not paid as much attention to the lyrics before.
Sure.
So I just wanted to go through at least a few of your songs to sort of get a sense of the way you use imagery in your songs. And
right.
And I definitely got that same vibe from a few of them as with Dylan. You know, you definitely get that, you get a feeling rather than a sense of narrative necessarily.
Right. And yet I could walk through each one of those lines and tell you what it was about for me.
Exactly.
And yet the total for you would be quite different and no less valuable.
If that
makes sense.
And I always say that, you know, the minute an artist releases something into the world, it's not theirs anymore. It's always up to the interpretation of the person on the receiving end, whether it's a book or a song or whatever. But you know, the point that I thought was great was that, and that's exactly my point, that what you just said, is that you know exactly what all that means, but it might resonate completely different with me. And I think that's, in terms of, you know, for a songwriter, for a lyrics writer, I think it's very important that, you know, you paint a picture with your words and your imagery, and it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't have to be a story, and it doesn't have to be very clear what you mean. And in fact, often it's better if it's vague, but I think it's very important that you yourself know what it is you're trying, or at least what it means to you. You
know, I agree.
You're not just piling together random images that don't make any sense on any plane.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I don't want to pick on any songwriters, but But there are more, I think, modern, you know, there are many sort of quote unquote new Dylans out there who I feel are guilty of that, you know, who were inspired by that kind of tapestry, that imagery, and relied a little too heavily on that. And it's there are at least artists out there who leave me with that feeling like you're just stringing words together that kind of sound cool. And yeah. And when that happens, at least for me, it doesn't resonate, and I don't walk away feeling a, you know, that connection with the artist or the song.
No, yeah, I agree. And I've done that myself, you know, 10, 15 years ago when I was sort of experimenting with different styles of lyrics, back when I was sort of maybe struggling a little bit to find my voice. You know, I would just ape what I'd heard from Dylan or from Tom Waits or Nick Cave or stuff like that. You know, those great artists that put together these fantastic lyrics that it's almost impossible to decipher, really. Sure. But there's obviously some great story there behind it. It's just very tricky often to get at the core. So I would do
but
that.
But I think you feel it as a listener. I think you feel it.
Yeah.
You know.
So I, you know, so sometimes, you know, now when I go back and I read through some of my old lyrics or I listen to some of my old demos, and you know, I sort of go, ah, yeah, right, that doesn't work at all. But you know, so I think that's a very, very important point. And you know, but going back to the literal sense of imagery, sort of you know, painting a real picture, because you know, the other that sort of ethereal imagery we've been talking about is maybe a little bit, that's sort of, you have to go by feeling there. But I think there is one, because I sort of like to take these concepts and distill them down to little nuggets. And there's just one thing that I, when the one more I thought about this is one little, I don't know if we want to call it trick, but it's a device, I guess, that I love it when I hear it. And I've used it sometimes myself. It's sort of when you paint a picture and you show everything and you're not telling everything, but then you sort of end by summing it up. And my example is, I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry by Hank Williams. You know, the, I think the first,
I do know that. Yeah. I know the song.
Yeah. Sure. And you know, that's the way every verse works. So you got those lines, hear that lonesome whippoorwill, he sounds too blue to fly. That means he's lost his will to live. So there you have the image. And then you sum it up by saying, I'm so lonesome I could cry.
Right, right.
So you take
that's a nice device.
Yeah, so you take that feeling and you put it in images, and then you end up by putting it in words. So I think that's one sort of practical thing that, you know, and I've done this probably subconsciously without realizing that's the device, but I think it's a very useful device. You know, if you have a feeling, because I what I do when I'm sort of working on songs, or when I have an idea, you know, some line will occur to me, I'll write it down and then I'll just put it away, and then later I'll come back to that line.
Interesting.
And so that's, you know, and a lot of the times it's, you know, that's for example a great line that I, at some point I could have come up with something similar. I'm so lonesome I could cry. You know, it's a very lyrical sentence. It's a great sentence to sing. So, you know, when you have something like that, that by itself, it might not work that well. It's a very melodramatic line.
Right, right.
But so, you know, that's a thing that, you know, if you're stuck for song ideas, I think that would work very well. You take a line that you might have come up with that doesn't work very well maybe on its own sentence, so you can paint a picture around it and then maybe sum everything up in using that line.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you know, I'll be honest, I'm not a craftsman when it comes to songwriting. You know, I'm not one of these people, and I've always admired them, people who kind of have a concept and can sit down and write songs. Like, I'm the worst in writing sessions when, you know, in the past, my old manager would get me with well-known artists and songwriters, and the sessions were always a bust. I never wrote on command. I don't have any conscious process working it whatsoever. Virtually everything I've ever written, with maybe one or two exceptions, I can think of two songs I wrote that were concepts where I thought to myself, I want to write a song called, and had the idea for, you know, many months, and then one day the song finally kind of arrived. It kind of came. Mm-hmm. But everything else has always more or less been me sitting there with a guitar in my hand, alone, maybe watching TV, staring off out a window, whatever it was, just kind of tinkering and going through something in life, usually not positive, and just kind of humming and singing along and making up words, and something comes out and I go, ooh, I like that. And I keep playing it over and over, and more words come, and everything kind of falls in place. And before I know it, I've got, you know, a verse and a chorus. And then I get a little more conscious about, okay, I need a, you know, I need a second, a verse and a third verse and maybe a bridge. And I sort of push a little bit harder to force some additional words that express similar sentiments, you know, to what I've already created out. But for the most part, it comes from just, you know, striking the muse one day. And as I mentioned, I'm a huge fan of imagery, and I think you'll find it in just about all of my stuff. You'll find that that's the sort of through line. I'm a lyrics-oriented artist. I wouldn't be making music if it wasn't for my love of lyrics. Mm-hmm. But the imagery for me, usually, again, it almost always kind of just falls out of nowhere. I can remember once I was like 19, going through a pretty severe bout of depression, living in Seattle at the time, just sitting there watching, of all things, Oprah Winfrey on my little black and white TV. They got, you know, two channels with a big antenna on it. And she was interviewing people that were on their deathbeds, and she was having a frank conversation about, you know, what is it like knowing you're going to die? And somebody said, I know that I live with dignity, and I just happened to be playing guitar while he said it, and I grabbed that line, and suddenly I know that I've lived with dignity found its way into the song and kick-started this whole song about, you know, sort of depression and losing the plot and being scared about ever being able to get your hands back on the handlebars, so to speak, and you know, a whole song came together by some random thing that I saw on TV. Another time, I was in my apartment. There's a song. That song, by the way, was Remember Me, which is on my first album, From There to Here. I have another song, Baby Bye Bye, which is on Elephant Graveyard. I'm not sure what you're familiar with or not. Yeah. But that song started with me, again, sitting there in my apartment, this time in Los Angeles, years later. And I had a picture of a rooster on the wall. And I looked at the rooster, and the words like, I'm a proud bird, watch me strut my stuff, came out, and I started singing about a peacock somewhere later on. Yeah. And the rooster never made it into it, but it was that just my eyes caught a bird and my mouth said a bird. And then what ultimately happens in every case is that, again, there's something bubbling up. There's some emotional thing that I'm going through, and I'm just hanging images on those emotions. And before you know it, you've got a song on your hands. And so I'd love to be able to sit down and like you just did and say, here's a great device, you know, here's something you can do. But my process has always been really completely intuitive. And it's just looking around and looking for things that, I don't know, inspire my mouth to move and a word to come out. But they're always hung on pretty precise emotions and experiences. So while I could tell you what every single lyric in every one of my songs is about, I could tell you the precise experience or feelings that the line was about. You know, most of that would be pretty indecipherable to the average listener, but I think you'd be able to listen to the song and pinpoint the same emotions without necessarily knowing, you know, the specific circumstances, kind of along the lines of what we talked about before.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, later on.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and I think going back to the you know, watching TV and snatching lines out of just random things, I think that's very, very important. And that's pretty much, I mean, it's the same process for me. I get these little lines and snippets here and there, and I just write them down, and then I'll sort of pick through them. So I think, you know, it might be a little bit more methodical.
Right.
But I think, you know, that it's very much the same thing.
Still the same random muse.
Yeah. And that, that's why I always say, and I talk about it a lot, is I think it's very, very important to always keep your antennae out and to, you know, listen to music, read books, watch films, whatever you enjoy, you know, play video games, whatever, watch talk shows, and just listen for these little interesting things. And that's actually, you know, would you say that that's something that, you know, consciously or subconsciously, would you say that's a big part of, or at least a part of your, you know, the way you collect, quote unquote, material?
Sitting around consciously keeping my eyes open, my antenna up, is that what you mean?
Consciously or unconsciously, I mean, just, you know, popular culture. I mean, you know, a lot of that stuff comes from, you know, the things.
It comes from living, you know, you can't, that's one of the reasons I think we see so many, we see over and over again, young people, or artists, great artists, you know, when they're young, they're really, on the mark, they're really great, and then as they get older they tend to somehow become less relevant. And it's rare that, you know, maybe Tom Waits comes to mind as one of the few artists who seems to just get better and better, at least in my opinion. But for the most part, we see artists, you know, whether it's Guns N' Roses or the Rolling Stones, and the list goes on, they seem to lose their edge at some point. And I think a lot of that is just because they're young people confronting things that are new in the world, and they're riding the zeitgeist wave, so to speak, and they're having feelings about it. You know, the world is hard and it's scary and stressful and overwhelming. And when you're young and you haven't quite figured out how to navigate things, you really do have your eyes open, and you're confronting these new technologies and social developments and injustices and all these different things, and you're forming some of the most important and powerful feelings and positions that you're ever going to have or take in your life. And so I think that our art tends to be really on point and poignant and important, however you want to describe that, when we're young, precisely because we have our eyes open, you know, because we're out there paying attention to the world. And I think as we get older, more set in our ways, we stop forming new opinions about things, or, you know, at least many of us do, and we stop. We start seeing the patterns, I think, and so the magic dies a little bit, and so we observe things in a different way. And I think, you know, it is really important to keep doing that if you're going to continue to be a relevant songwriter, because you need to be able to express those same things that everybody else is going through for the first time, or stressed about, or, you know, having feelings about in one way or another. And if you can't capture those same feelings that everybody else is sort of confronting, then I think you become less relevant. Was that an answer to your question?
Answer to a great question anyway. I mean, it's a great answer. No, but I think that's a great point. And I think maybe, and I get hung up on this a lot, because you hear people talk about, oh, you have to, you know, great creation comes from pain. It comes from suffering and all of that stuff.
Sure.
You know, and you touched on that before, how, you know, you were feeling depressed and that line came to you. And I think that's been true for me as well. I mean, I've struggled with a lot of issues and things, and a lot of great songs that come from that, but also a lot of, you know, crap in my life. And so I think, you know, being able to exercise empathy and you know, make up those stories, maybe to a certain extent, without experiencing them yourself, is a very useful thing. And maybe that is why a lot of these artists, like you're talking about, you know, like your Rolling Stones or whatever, you know, they don't have that angst anymore. They're very comfortable.
Right.
And so maybe that takes the edge off a little bit. So maybe what you need, but I'm sure that Tom Waits is pretty comfortable at this point.
Yeah.
You know, but I just think maybe, you know, he has that, you know, maybe he's drawing on past experiences. Maybe he's, I know that he writes from the news a lot. I've heard that. And so, you know, so maybe he's just better able than some others to sort of dig deep and underneath the surfaces and pull up these things without experiencing them firsthand. And I think that's,
yeah, I don't know the guy. I have no idea what his process is. I've never really read about it or anything like that. But I it feels, as a listener, as a fan, it feels like he's been able to maintain his fresh perspective on the world, and whether that's excitement or depression, I'm not 100% sure. But whatever that magic is that he's always seen in the world, he seems to still see it, and be very inspired by the process of talking about it.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's that's probably, as you said, that's probably one of the biggest keys to maintaining your spark and not losing. I mean, I know a lot of artists are even afraid of losing their ability to create songs,
right?
If they
become happy,
yeah, it's a big, I come across this all the time, and I think it's a terrible thing. It's horrible living your life thinking you have to choose between happiness and, the art and craft that makes you happy.
Yeah, I certainly relate to that. I think a lot of people have felt, a lot of artists feel that way. I don't think, that's really what's going on. I've never, in any other arena of life, I've never seen depression or negative emotions lead to more productivity. I certainly, while it may feel that way, again, particularly when you're young and going through a lot of hardships for the first time before you've really seen those patterns in life, you're trying to work it out, and we try to work through our negative experiences, and the natural process of an artist is to to work through them in song. So I think we might be having an overlap of the fact that we are confronting a lot of negative experiences for the first time and in the most meaningful way when we're young. That is perhaps overlapping with the fact, that sort of other point that I made a little bit ago, is that as we get older, we see patterns and we tend to stop trying to work things out. When you have a lot more answers, you're trying to solve a lot less things. And yeah. I don't think it's the depression that is leading to the great art. I think it's that position in life for many of us, that time in life that is leading to a lot of the great art. But I also don't mean to suggest that I think we're limited. Like, as you get older, you can't be brilliant. I think it's just really important that you keep living, that you're out there in the world, that you have your finger on the pulse, that you're seeing the problems of this world and not the problems that you encountered 15 years ago. Because in those cases, again, you will see those patterns. You won't be trying to work it out. You'll know what's coming. And I think you'll be a lot less inspired. But if you're out there living and confronting things head on and seeing all the new developments and keeping your finger on the pulse of what society's going through, and also picking up your instrument every day and waiting for that muse to show up, I think you'll probably do pretty well staying relevant and being a great artist. Depression or not. And truth be told, I think, again, the reality is that if you're able to do what I just said and get out of your darker traps, you'll be more productive and accomplish more things, reach more people, and have a far more rewarding experience as a human and artist.
Definitely. And getting back to imagery, so we went through mental health there for a little bit, which is a great discussion as well. because you made the point, pick up your instrument every day and play it. And to me, just as importantly, working on using imagery as well as you possibly can, that's also something that you need to practice, I think. Just working out that muscle. And that's right. One of the things that I love doing, and this is imagery, and it's also just using language. And, I write most of my lyrics in English. When I'm watching TV or I'm reading a book or something, if I come across an interesting line, I just love taking it and turning it on its head and seeing if I can reverse the meaning, flip the image upside down. However that works out. And I think that's just great practice. And again, it comes back to what I said about writing things down. Sometimes I'll think of a line and I'll say, how about if I turn that around. And I've taken the example before where, you know, some, I heard this line, very, very simple line that you hear all the time is, you know, things are not as bad as they seem. And I figured, why not, you know, come up with a line that's everything is worse than it seems.
Right.
You know,
right.
Which, that's not imagery, obviously. But, you know, one of the lines that I have as well, which is you look $100.
Right.
Which is a sort of a cheapening of, you know, the traditional line, which would be you look $1 million or whatever. So, you know, right. You look $100, you sort of, yeah, you look okay, you know.
Sure, sure.
So I think that just, because as musicians, we are very aware, I think, all of us, that you need to work on your musical ability. You need to pick up your guitar or sit at your piano or whatever you do and work on those muscles. But I think creating... you know, just putting words together is mm-hmm. just as important, you know, and just sitting down and whether you're writing a song or not, just thinking about those things as often as you can will keep you sharp. And that also, you know, might make you, it might spark stories that you might not have thought about telling in a song.
Sure, sure. That makes perfect sense. I certainly think that that would work for a lot of people. I don't think that my process aligns with that. Like I've never, and maybe this is one of the problems with my writing in the sense that I said, you know, I've always been terrible at writing on command. It's very hard mm-hmm. for me to sit down and create an album. It's very hard for me to sit down with another songwriter. And I've blown some really great opportunities to work with really great people because I've sat down and just nothing comes. And that's mm-hmm. kind of how it always is. And maybe I would be better off more consciously working on things like you described, but I've just never really done that. For me, and maybe this, you know, we're all driven by different things. When I was a kid, when I, you know, I was 14 or something. So this is back in the metal day, you know, Guns N' Roses had just come out. I was in high school and I had my favorites prior to that. Of course, you know, as a young kid, I was listening to a lot of other stuff, but, it was at that time when, you know, you're starting to want to be cool and you're thinking about girls and all that stuff. And Guns N' Roses comes out. I'm a freshman in high school, I think. And just kind of went, whoa, I love this. And I loved it so much. I didn't want to just be a fan. I wanted to do it. I've always kind of had that impulse. If I really get into something, I don't want to just appreciate it. I want to do it. Yeah. You know, I want to, if I like beer, I want to be a brewer. You know, I don't appreciate from afar. Yeah. And, so that it was that band, that time that kind of got me, I loved it so much. I just wanted to make music. And there's always been a part of me that, and I hope this comes out right, but it is striving to create my own versions of things that I love or am inspired by, in the sense of like, I'm trying to avoid saying, you know, I'm setting out to copy the stuff that I love, but there is some truth in that. And I remember hearing, I heard it secondhand, so I don't even know if it's true, but I remember hearing that John Lennon was often doing that. You know, he mm-hmm. was trying to basically write a Supreme song or a Little Richard song, but it mm-hmm. didn't come out sounding like the Supremes or Little Richard. It came out sounding like, you know, John Lennon.
Yeah, Tom Waits had this great quote where he said, all art is you're copying another artist and you're doing a bad job. that's what art is.
No, that's very that's a great quote. Yeah. And that's very much, I think, what I'm doing. I'm mm-hmm. setting out to copy the stuff that has inspired me. It's just coming out very differently. Hopefully. And so again, there's never really, the only real process, the thing that I do that leads to actually more writing, is listen to more music. You know, when I'm not actively listening to music and I'm not connected to that feeling that music is important, and I'm not feeling that every single day, then I'm not writing. So listening to music, getting inspired by other people's lyrics, is what actually, you know, that's the exercise that for me, helps me write not only more, but again, it's imagery in music that, you know, again, trying to get back on course, it's always the imagery and lyrics that has inspired me. So when I go out and I listen to artists, whether they're Bob Dylan, Tom Waits, or even Kurt Cobain, I get inspired. You get that rush of, oh my God, that line is awesome. It makes, you know, I love the way it makes me feel. That's badass. Just something about it moves you, touches you, excites you. And then next thing you know, I'm trying to sort of create my own version of that feeling. And then I've got a song. So the only real two things that, you know, in terms of exercises or disciplines that have helped me. One is to listen to other music that inspires me along the lines of the stuff that I want to create. And interestingly, I've never really been one to listen to artists that I can't borrow from. You know, going back to those rock days, I never listened to the White Snakes of the world, those singers with high voices, because I never had a high voice. You know, I listened. As soon as the Seattle Sound sort of hit, I was in heaven, because finally, you know, guys with deeper voices were in demand instead of those metal singers, which I never really was. I've always listened to stuff that is within my wheelhouse, whether that's good or bad, because there is some part of me that wants, you know, again, part of, I guess, what excites me about music is the idea that I can create it. And so if I know right out of the gate that it's outside of my wheelhouse, I tend not to be as inspired by it or interested in it. But again, going back to disciplines, one is to listen to music regularly and constantly tap into that feeling of being inspired. And then the other is, again, just showing up, picking up that guitar every day. I don't know if this is a cliche. I don't know where I heard it. It might be one of those things that everyone's heard 1,000 times. But somebody once told me somewhere that, you know, you can't rely on the muse to show up or depend upon the muse to show up, but you can show up. So if you're serious about writing a lot of music, you know, every day you need to dedicate time to picking up that instrument. And if you're a songwriter, opening your mouth and trying to get some words to come out, and a few melodies to come out to support those words. And if you do that every day, eventually that muse is going to hit. And if you do that enough, you're going to have, you know, album after album after album. Yeah. But that's really the only part of the process that has ever been conscious for me. Listen to music and pick up my instrument a lot.
Yeah. And because you mentioned, you know, staying in your wheelhouse, that's actually one of the things that I was sort of thinking about before we started recording was, you know, different genres have very different uses of imagery. Right, you have certain things, you know, because you mentioned Guns N' Roses, they're going to have very, very different imagery from, you know, a hip hop artist or Tom Waits or whatever. So, and this is just because I know you, you know, you work with artists from a lot of different genres,
right?
And so, you know,
are you talking as a sort of marketing consultant in the music industry, or are you talking about as an artist?
Because
I've
both.
Done sort of
Yeah, I just mean that you're probably even more familiar with, you know, the way imagery is different between genres than I am. But I'm just wondering, you know, because you said, you know, that's what you listen to. I mean, I listen to all kinds of music. Most of the stuff that I listen to is sort of folk rock, Americana type stuff. But, you know, I also will listen to heavy metal and hip hop and everything in between.
Sure.
So I'm just wondering, and again, this just sort of occurred to me, you know, would you think it would be worth it to, as an artist, to maybe pay attention to other kinds of music, if only in terms of imagery? Like if you're trying to come up with something fresh or new, you know, maybe if you're a hip hop artist, maybe listen to Bob Dylan and see what he's doing, and you know what I mean?
Certainly, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I'm not actually trying to say that I limit what the genres that I listen to things that are within my wheelhouse. I actually listen to just about every genre out there. But even within, let's take hip hop, you know, there are artists that I feel, okay, I can see the patterns here. I get what they're doing. This is cool. I get their approach to their perspective on the world, whether that's, you know, Cypress Hill or Andre 3000, or, you know, there are quite a lot of hip hop artists that do use very different imagery and tell very different stories, but still inspire me in a very similar way to someone like Bob Dylan. I mean, early NWA, you know, it was rebellious. It was powerful. It was important. It was, I think maybe this is getting a bit off topic, but
that's fine.
I was just talking about this. The other night, you know, I love, at its core, I love rock and roll. And rock and roll to me has always been about a response, you know, and again, getting a little on the soapbox here. I really do think to some extent, not the genre, but the spirit of rock and roll is perhaps permanently dead, because it was always all of it. And again, I'm broadening the rock and roll there with air quotes to encompass things like NWA and Bob Dylan. While the genre was not specifically rock and roll, it was all about this sort of imbalance in society. Mm-hmm. And then a good 5-10 years or more of marinating, you know, of the underbelly of mainstream culture kind of getting tired of the way things were, and then starting to express that frustration in music, whether that was early rock and roll talking about or fighting against sort of societal repression, or whether it was hip hop, you know, culture talking about injustices in their urban neighborhoods, or whether it was, you know, even Bob Dylan talking about, a lot of civil imbalance, mm-hmm. and strife, and introducing intellect to popular music, something that was sort of missing. You know, it was all becoming kind of bubblegum, and in comes this guy talking about really important, real things that didn't happen until mm-hmm. he sort of started doing it, at least not in the way that it did once he started doing it. Or whether it was 80s hair bands rebelling against, you know, Reagan era preppies. There's always this kind of imbalance, and the subculture of society gets kind of fed up with it. That subculture slowly over the course of time becomes mainstream culture. And in that process, as they become the mainstream perspective, again, we've got a lot of time for things to marinate and evolve, and new genres emerge. And again, I don't think because of the internet that can really ever happen again, because music is, the second you have an idea, it's being absorbed. There's no more time for marination and growth of genres and movements in the same way that there was, at least. Again, we're talking about two different things, but bringing it back to your questions about imagery and different genres, you know, that's my wheelhouse. I love that fighting against that sort of imbalance, regardless of what the genre is. And as silly as it sounds, you can still have people that approach things or sort of whose perspective looks at the world in that kind of a way, and they can still tackle a love song and have it be, you know, I'm not trying to suggest that it all needs to be political or anything like that. No. Far from it. But I like, when you go back to the old blues guys, you know, there's this comedy and tragedy and a desire for things not to suck so bad, yeah. You know, and I think that has always been there as rock and roll has evolved and changed. And that's my wheelhouse. That's the kind of stuff that inspires me. And that's what I love in music, whether it's a hip hop artist or Americana artist or a heavy metal artist. Yeah. So certainly I'm not trying to say that I limit my listening to just Bob Dylan, although I probably do from time to time, but, yeah. But to again, bring it back home and answer your question. Certainly. I don't think you want to be so close-minded that you're not exposing yourself to all kinds of, you know, brilliant perspectives that are out there. It just gives you, you know, the broader your perspective is as a human being, the better it's going to be as an artist.
Yeah, I think we're back. I think we've come full circle. You know, I think what you're saying is the first thing that you said was, you know, it's all about evoking feelings, and that's what images do much better than sure. writing down words, right?
Yeah,
I think that's a great.
Otherwise you're left saying, I feel really sad because my, you know, girlfriend or boyfriend left me, and I want your sympathy. You know, that's
exactly
without imagery, that's literally the sum total of most messages. How fun is that? Whereas when you use imagery to tell that story, it becomes not about you, it becomes about the listener. And it, again, because it's often hard for us to grab onto our own emotions, I think these broader images allow us to sink our teeth in much more easily to the problems that, you know, are knocking around inside of us, and allow us to get a hold of them and start working our way through them, as opposed to if someone's very precise and very literal, then you kind of are just going, well, that's not me, I'm not feeling the way you're describing. But if someone presents an emotion you can relate to in a broader sense. You can grab onto the parts of it that are you and that do resonate. And by getting a toehold on your own emotions, you can start to flush them to the surface and get through them. And yeah, I think that's, for me, you know, that all really, I see that starting with the blues, you know, way, way, way back when, and evolving into, well, perhaps folk first, but, you know, well, country music and then rock and roll and then hip hop. And, you know, I think that's been a really important part of all of music. And without that introduction, I remember someone saying that when Bob Dylan, you know, that snare crack on Like a Rolling Stone, this is in a book I had read about him years ago, and that snare drum was like the sound of the door to the mind of popular music opening. You know, I'm probably getting that quote wrong, but that was really, at least on that scale, the first time the world kind of went, you know, this I want to hold your hand kind of music can actually be about really deep and important things. And again, I think it was prior to popular music with blues and, you know, a lot of traditional roots music as well. But that's when it found its way to the mainstream, and it's kind of been there ever since. And for the most part, you know, that is always expressed through imagery rather than being literal.
Exactly. Well, I think it's a great note to end on.
Cool.
Thanks so much. Where can people find you and your music?
Yeah, just head on over to johnojaka.com. And if you can't spell it, just go to Google and butcher it, and Google will send you in the right direction. And find me on iTunes and wherever else music is consumed. But go to johnojaka.com and get some for free. That's really the best place to do it.
And I'll put a link in the show description on onebadday.is/episode5.
Sounds good.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening.
All right. I'd like to thank John Ojaka again for that. I had a lot of fun doing that conversation. You know, we sort of went off topic here and there, but I thought that was a lot of fun. You know, John knows his stuff, and you should definitely check out his music if you haven't already. Again, if you want to support the podcast, you can go to onebadday.is/episode5, and there are some Amazon links there that'll, you know, if you're going to do any Amazon shopping, you can do that through those links, and I get a little cut. It doesn't cost you any more than it would otherwise, and you'll be helping me to bring you this. And again, if you go to onebadday.is/audible, you get 2 free audiobooks, and again, you'll be helping me out. So, I will see you next time. I'd like to close the show out with one of John's great songs. This is the song Baby Bye Bye that he mentioned during our talk. So enjoy that. And folk on. Bye bye.
Man, doing time, whisper sweet, one little word. It's like the lightning when it touches down to earth. Wait until you're absolutely sure, for sure. Strut my stuff. You are a diamond girl. master. Yeah, I'm a peacock, baby. I would lie. I'm so beautiful, but unable to fly. Perhaps one day I'll know the reasons why. Just discussing matters like these. And he said, boy, you can't grasp the wind. I didn't have to ask him why. I just smiled and I said with a sigh, bye bye baby, bye bye. And I'm stuck in line. So whisper sweet whining words. It's like the sunset creeping around the curve. But wait until you're absolutely sure. Oh, sure. Me and Pericles, just discussing matters like these. And he said, boy, you can't grasp the wind. I didn't have to ask him why. I just smiled and I said with a sigh, bye bye baby, bye bye. Oh,